This podcast is brought to you by Monetary Gold. Listeners who open a qualified account will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. To learn more, go to monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston. You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I'm very excited to welcome on my next guest. He's been on the program a few times. Stephen Miller from Spectator joins us now. Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Hi, Grace. Glad to be back.
Before we get into your piece, which is titled Trump Deserves the Hillary Treatment, I would first love to get your take on what is happening right now. The FBI raided Donald Trump's personal residence. And I know, Stephen, just from following you on social media, you are not a Trump fan by any means. I don't want to say you're critical, but yeah, you are critical of him. And you were, if anything, hoping Republicans would kind of steer away from him in 2024. What do you make of this now?
We're just trying to get some sleep at this point. You know, it's like I think there's a little bit of fatigue setting in with the former president. Along those lines, I mean, certainly the DOJ and Merrick Garland did him a favor. You saw polling, basically just instant polling, say there's about a 5 to 6 point swing in his direction because of this raid. Which, I mean, the optics of it, when you step back from it, and I even think even casual audiences will look at this and say the optics of this aren't very good. You have kind of what seems to be another Anodyne Espionage Act disclosure, which is similar. It is under the same statute that was Hillary Clinton. And a lot of people will look at this and say, why was this not treated equally? And then also, I mean, you have to take into consideration the optics of the sitting attorney general is a former SCOTUS nominee that was prevented from sitting on the Supreme Court with Trump's election. And whether you like that or not, that's what it looks like. And you can blame Joe Biden for basically, I think, doing Obama a solid and putting Merrick Garland in that position. If it were not Garland and it was, you know, an appointee that we hadn't been familiar with or not a political appointee or someone like that, I think this would look very different, but it certainly looks like politicized justice to, you know, I think the casual eye, and you don't have to be a Trump supporter to see that.
Yeah, and another person that you think bears a lot of responsibility for how this might play out is James Comey. Can you kind of break that down for the audience?
Probably the most responsibility. If you flash back to July of 2016, when James Comey gave the press conference regarding Hillary Clinton's email server and the investigation into that. Again, the part of the statute, part of the criminal statute that they used to justify the raid at Mar-a-Lago was 18 U.S. Code 793, which is transmitting or detaining records, basically classified information. That was the same statute that was Hillary Clinton was being investigated under. So this isn't a whataboutism. This is two people of high notoriety, a former Secretary of State now and a former president now, being treated what appears to be very differently by, and granted, James Comey is not the FBI director, it's under Christopher Wray, but I think people, you know, that's a distinction without a difference. And what we saw from James Comey was his statement said that while there was negligence here, no prosecutor would take this case up and they don't feel that they could obtain a conviction of her. And what we're seeing now is should the Department of Justice and the FBI recommend a prosecution of Trump, you're going to have a lot of people in this country who are going to see that there are different rules for different sides of the political aisle. And you can blame, again, you can blame James Comey for that. And whether or not obtaining a guilty verdict was the point of Hillary Clinton, the point is that we're hearing a lot of this, no one is above the law, being thrown about over the last week or so, and we can clearly see that, yes, there are some people that are above the law. And if you choose to go with a prosecution of Donald Trump on this charge that you let Hillary Clinton off the hook with, it's going to look real poisonous to a lot of people.
Yeah, and there's an irony, Stephen, that this is from the same guy. And, you know, I know Joe claims that he finds out about it in the newspaper or on his bike rides or wherever he gets his news from. But there is an irony that the guy who told us he was going to kind of lower the temperature and, you know, unify the country and take politics down a notch is in charge while this is all happening.
Or certainly looks to be in charge. And I also, I mean, you can think this is conspiratorial or not, but to say that there was no contact between Joe Biden's, you know, DOJ and the White House while this, you know, a political opponent, both past and maybe future, home is raided by federal agents, I think is BS on its face. And I think people see that. And you have to also take into account the fact that while this was happening, Joe Biden basically fled down to, you know, South Carolina for a break, and they got him completely out of the picture. And we know that the warrant was signed a few days before the search was executed. So this certainly looks, again, to me, like someone who they just wanted to get the old man out of the picture for a week and let this, you know, let this happen and then let this blow over. And then he comes back and it's like, what did I miss? And so, again, there's a lot of optics here at work that just it doesn't look very good for either Merrick Garland, the DOJ, or the White House.
Yeah, and that actually brings me to my next question, Stephen. Do you think they fully understood just how bad this was going to look for them? Like, did they predict this kind of backfiring? Or are they so surrounded by like-minded people that they thought this was going to be celebrated amongst Americans? Because when I saw Merrick Garland give that press conference, he had this deer in the headlights look as if he had no idea he was bringing on this kind of a bleep storm.
I don't know. I think that they certainly had to have understood the historical impact that an action like this would have been. I think it would be naive to assume that that wasn't something that was discussed. And again, why it's naive to think that Joe Biden's White House was not consulted on this, or at least made aware that this was going to happen. There's this game going on right now inside the Biden administration where they want you to think that the Department of Justice isn't under the executive branch and that Merrick Garland is not a direct employee of the president. And they're doing this again. They're trying to show you the separation to kind of try to preserve what they're calling is the integrity of this investigation. And it's just not going to work. So for them to not, if like you say, for them to possibly not understand what this could have caused or what this would have done, or the, again, the optics of this whole situation, I mean, it's possible, but I sincerely doubt that. I think that there had to have been talks about just the historical nature of this and saying, you know what you're going to do by doing this, right? This has never happened in the history of this country where the Department of Justice of a sitting president raids the home of a former president, maybe a future opponent of the opposing party. And they had, I mean, they had to have had some kind of discussions about that, in which case it would suggest that they just didn't care. They just said, you know, you need to go back down there and you need to get these documents no matter what. And so, and it's also interesting because these are public employees. I understand that we can't disclose information, but Merrick Garland is a public servant. And so this idea that we can't tell you what he had or we can't disclose in the affidavit what we were going after, it's kind of a good macabre for them where they can just say, oh, no, it was very important that we get this information back from him. And when people go, well, okay, what was the information? They can say, oh, it's classified, or, oh, we can't jeopardize an ongoing investigation. And there's real problems with that. There has to be almost full transparency over this.
I'm speaking with Stephen Miller, and I'm glad you brought that up because a big question I have for you involves the media. I know that you are as disgusted with the state of journalism right now as I am, and they've been very heavily involved in this, whether it be leaks to the Washington Post or, you know, anonymous sources. How do you think they've been handling this, and you know, what kind of part do they have to play in this story?
I think there are a lot of journalists and a lot of news outlets that are dependent upon keeping Donald Trump in the news cycle for their careers, for their paychecks, and for their ad revenue. They are very dependent on keeping him the main character of American politics. Sometimes he makes it easy on them, sometimes not. There was just a piece, the op-ed from the Washington Post editorial board today was the family separation policy was a disaster and it could happen again. And they want you to somehow believe that Donald Trump is still president 2.5 years while we have hundreds of thousands of migrants coming across the southern border right now. And so you see, and if I mean, I could probably go to CNN's homepage right now and I could probably count double-digit stories on Donald Trump right now. And so there are people invested in keeping him, again, the main character in American politics. And there's probably a good chance that he jumps back into the ring again here in a few months. And when that happens, then I'm like, okay, now we can cover him. But they do this, again, in a way of not covering the current president. We're seeing a slew of stories today and this week about the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. And if you were to browse over these stories, you wouldn't know who was president or who made that decision from a year ago.
It's so true. Sometimes I go to stories, whether it be about the supply chain crisis. I remember reading about the baby formula crisis, and I was reading about it, and I thought, I just do a quick like little maneuver with the keyboard, and I type in Biden to see if his name is anywhere in the article. And no, all these things are just happening to, as Jake Tapper once put it, the guy in charge. I mean, there's no mention of his name. It's really an amazing thing. Stephen Miller, I wanted to ask you one more thing. You talked about how a lot of people want Trump elected, and they want him to at least be in the news cycle. And I agree with you on that 100%. But I do think there's a faction of this Democrat Party, the really Trump deranged people, who are convinced that they're someday going to see him in an orange jumpsuit. And that just makes them kind of like foam at the mouth. My question for you is there any chance that they put Donald Trump in handcuffs?
No. I said that pretty unequivocally. You do. You're right. There is a faction of people that are obsessed with this notion, or a mugshot, or a trial, or you know, all of these things that would prevent him from running again. And as I wrote a couple of weeks ago, the only people that are going to send Donald Trump packing are GOP primary voters in 2024. His power comes from his base, and his base has to be eroded. And that could come from they're just tired of the antics. They might agree with some of the policy stuff, but they're just kind of tired of the screaming on social media all the time. But another part of this comes, it's not just Donald Trump. I mean, going back, you can go back to the early 2000s when they were, you know, demanding George W. Bush and Dick Cheney be prosecuted as war criminals. And so this kind of fetish has gone on for decades. And I think that there is a part of that that plays into this with Donald Trump and Mar-a-Lago. When they see the FBI raiding Mar-a-Lago and they have this hope that he's going to be frog marched out in handcuffs, there's a part of this that goes back to just seeing that with any president. You could argue, you know, how they reacted when Nixon was pardoned, and they weren't going to get that opportunity. And then, of course, they wanted Bush and Cheney charged on war crimes, and they never got that opportunity. And then, of course, there was times when Mitt Romney was being talked about as a murderer and a criminal, and they never got that opportunity. And so there is part of this just buildup of, you know, this idea that they're going to see Donald Trump's mugshot or Donald Trump, again, in handcuffs out of Mar-a-Lago. And I mean, I guess that there's always that possibility. But of all the roads that you don't want to go down, this is the road you don't want to go down. Because if we go down that road, Joe and Hunter Biden are going to be facing a grand jury in about 3 years when a Republican attorney general opens up a case on his son and who the big guy is.
Stephen Miller from Spectator. You can read his latest, Trump Deserves the Hillary Treatment. You can find him on Twitter at Red Steez. He's an excellent follow. Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Anytime, Grace. Thanks.
We'll be right back with your calls, 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. She's a master thespian, trained in the art of performance.
These pretzels are making me thirsty!
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Global unrest is battering the food supply chain and the energy markets. It's incumbent on you to be prepared. So get ready with ReadyWise. Go to ReadyWise.com and use code Howie10 to get 10% off your next purchase. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Will the DOJ opt to release the affidavit?
No. No, I don't think they will. I think I've already seen something that it's going to jeopardize the investigation. We can't do that.
It's now a 51% that say no.
I hope they do. I want to go back to something. We had an interesting call with Dave, who's kind of like the resident moonbat of the Grace Curley show. And he made some points. I made some points. And one thing he said that I do want to backtrack on, I want to give him kudos here for this one, is that it has been refuted that Obama kept 33 million classified documents. And they, according to the National Archives and the Records Administration, they were released properly and they were handled properly and they were sent to the National Archives assumed exclusive legal and physical custody of Obama's presidential records when President Barack Obama left office in 2017. So they did come out with a statement against that. So I was wrong on that one point. I stand by everything else I said, Dave. And I actually think you were wrong on most of what you're saying, but I'm going to give you that one because we don't like to spread fake news here. We're not afraid to admit when we're wrong. And that's what makes us different than the mainstream media. 844-500-4242. There's a lot of races to watch tonight, specifically in Wyoming and Alaska. I know I'll be very interested to see what happens with Liz Cheney. The writing seems to be on the wall for Liz. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe this will be a story about a comeback kid. Maybe all of those J6 monologues and Washington Post puff pieces will save her from an epic loss.
Maybe that very enthusiastic message from her father will turn things around for her campaign.
It is an amazing thing, Taylor, to watch these people like Bill Kristol and all these, you know, principled conservatives twisting themselves. This is how far they twist with Trump derangement. They're now twisting themselves to the point where they're supporting Dick Cheney. I mean, it's a strange time.
Donald Trump bad, Liz Cheney good.
I wasn't convinced when Dick Cheney came out and said, you know, Donald Trump's a liar just because of the whole weapons of mass destruction, that small thing. But what did really sell me on Liz was Kevin Costner in the t-shirt saying he supports Liz Cheney. That for me was like, whoa, if a Hollywood A-lister tells you to vote for someone, then they must be on to something. They've never led me wrong before.
Is he still an A-lister?
No. I think actually, in a weird way,
he has been A-lister, I would say.
Yeah, but Taylor, in a weird way, Yellowstone has like brought him back. People love that show.
Yeah, people do love that show.
People love it. It didn't get any nominations at the awards or anything like that. It got totally snubbed. I don't think it's woke enough.
Is that because it's strictly on a streaming platform?
I don't think so. I think there was a lot of ones that were on streaming, like Euphoria and all those shows. They're streaming platforms. No, I think it just got snubbed because it was, you know, featuring the old cowboys. The old cowboys who like to vote for Liz Cheney. I wonder if there'll
be like 8 different prequels for that show now that are coming out.
I've never watched it. I will say, am I tempted? Yes. Am I tempted because the male actors in the show are smoking hot? 100%. That's what's going to get me there.
That was also my reasoning, yeah.
That's what's going to get me watching Yellowstone, if I ever do decide to dabble. But Kevin Costner wearing a tight Liz Cheney shirt, that brought it back down to maybe not. I'm just watching it go. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down.
If you wear it, they will vote.
It's a bold strategy. Let's see how it works out for Liz. 844-500-4242. Also, former Governor Sarah Palin is running in a special election in Alaska. We'll keep you posted on that. We have so much more to get to. I want to take your calls. 844-500-4242. Going to do a little bit of Alec Baldwin in the news when we come back. Consider the source.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Here's the truth. The documents have been classified for 100 years, not because disappearing ink was any sort of national security secret. They've been classified because the government's default position in every case is that you have no right to see anything ever. It is their information. It is not yours. You're just a citizen. You're just the taxpayer. Shut up and pay for it all.
Tucker Carlson was on a roll last night. Neil McCabe must be listening to the program, and he heard my correction, and he sent me an opinion piece from the New York Post. There's no sainthood for Obama, National Archives, and Trump FBI raid uproar. There's a lot of back and forth about these archives. And I'm sure there's, you know, they said they were going to digitize it. We're still waiting on that. I'm sure he does get a certain kind of treatment because he's not Donald Trump. So they're going to make sure that there's no raids or anything like that. And they're going to tell us everything was kosher. And maybe it was. Maybe it was. Maybe there's no documents. Like I said, I've been wrong before. But I don't think that... I'm not convinced that this raid was necessary to raid Mar-a-Lago when he had 15 boxes that the FBI had already seen. Seems a little much to me. Something I wanted to discuss now, though, there's a lot of stories coming out of California. And the first one, before we get into the celebrity element of this, the first one is that the Los Angeles County reported Monday that over 27% of the signatures submitted on petitions to recall District Attorney George Gascon were invalid, after reporting that less than 1% of mail-in ballots were invalid in the 2020 election. Isn't that crazy, Taylor? So 27% of the signatures in this recall were invalid, but less than 1% of the ballots, the mail-in ballots, were invalid in 2020.
They obviously collected real signatures and not the voters of, cemeteries.
The county reported that it rejected 195,783 of the 715,833 signatures submitted, roughly 27.3%. Now, as we're talking about this, for people who don't know why Gascon is being recalled, just type in LA crime. It's insane what's happening there. The case that sticks out to me, and there's been so many horrific ones, but the mother who was run down on a street in LA, who was pushing her baby carriage, somehow she survived. It was like miraculous that she was able to survive. But people in LA who commit crimes are let out over and over again. The recidivism rate is insane, and they keep committing these crimes. And now you have people in these posh communities in Los Angeles who are sick of it. I saw Catherine McPhee the other day was tweeting about it. Catherine McPhee! She's married to David Foster. She was almost American Idol. She lost to Taylor Hicks. That season sucks.
How do you remember that?
Oh, it was glory days for me of TV.
Like 12 years ago.
Yeah, my family, we loved Catherine McPhee. And then Taylor Hicks won, and I thought, what is he going to do? I mean, he just doesn't have, the same commercial, style. And hadn't heard from him since, so I think I was right about that. I was probably only 14 when that season came
out.
Here's
a hint. You don't hear from any of these American Idol winners after they win.
You hear from Catherine McPhee?
Kelly, I've never heard of her.
Carrie Underwood?
Yeah.
Kelly Clarkson?
Early days of American Idol.
Yeah, the recent ones have definitely, but this was way back. This wasn't like the last 5 years. This was when American Idol still had something, Now it's kind of gone downhill. But anyway, how did we get here? So this is happening in LA. There's a big recall. The recall failed, according to what I've been reading today. And it stinks because people are really fed up with what's happening there, which brings us to a segment I did a long time ago. I haven't brought it back in a while, but it feels like it's pertinent today. Let's have a little taste of Hollywood.
This isn't Hollywood where someone takes care of things with a phone call. This is the real world.
Do you know who I am?
I'd like to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press. It's a very bold move making tonight plant-based.
COVID is God's gift to the left.
I just want to thank my agent and God, Harvey Weinstein.
Alrighty, so what do we have up first? Taylor, I'm going to let you choose. Should we go Alec Baldwin first or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Let's go Leo.
Actor Leonardo DiCaprio. You might know him from Titanic. From Catch Me If You Can,
Wolf of Wall Street,
The Departed. He also likes to be on giant yachts from time to time. Well, his nonprofit organization awarded grants to a dark money group that funneled the funds to a law firm filing lawsuits against oil companies alleging climate change deception. At the time of the email, so Dan Emmett, who's a philanthropist, and Ann Carlson, a climate change professor at the University of California, collaborated with the law firm to sue oil companies for releasing inaccurate information about their environmental impact. And Leo, the emails show that Leo awarded grants to these dark money funds, these dark money groups filing these climate change lawsuits. I bring this up because Leonardo DiCaprio is the definition of climate change for thee, but not for me. Every time I see this dude, he is on not just a boat, boats are not great for Mother Earth either. You can ask Nancy Pelosi. Mother Earth gets angry when she sees you on your boat. But yachts? Mother Earth must be livid, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, he thinks he is the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
You saw that movie?
Yes.
The mega yacht that guy had?
Yeah. He ended up crashing it into something. He got into a storm or something like that.
Yeah,
they were all
you're
on Quaaludes.
Yep.
Great movie. Yeah, but Leo is the definition of rules for thee, but not for me. I mean, this guy spends millions of dollars on, you know, his travel. I think I probably, and I've said this before, but I think it holds up. If at the end of our lives, you took me and you took Leonardo DiCaprio and you said, who's done less damage to Mother Earth? I think it'd be me.
Could probably pool in everybody else in the Boston metro area.
Yeah, and he would still beat us. But he's now he's funneling money to these groups that are filing climate change lawsuits, which to me says they're just pains in the asses. Like, that's their job, is just be pains in the asses to these oil companies. Beyond that, though, this is the real big scoop of the day coming from Tinseltown. The walls are closing in on Alec Baldwin.
You got to consider the source. You have to consider the source.
You do have to consider the source. The source is Maureen Callahan from the New York Post, and she does not like Alec Baldwin. I've read a lot of her pieces before about Alec, so I am considering the source. I am considering the source. But his gun lie is falling apart. And we can talk a little bit with Toby about this at two. Alec Baldwin has always insisted, despite all evidence to the contrary, that he didn't pull the trigger.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them. Never.
All right. Well, we're actually getting information that counteracts that, that contradicts that statement from Alec. Not that we don't have every reason to believe everything that comes out of Alec Baldwin's mouth. The FBI now says that he did. That finding, released over the weekend, comes just after the Santa Fe Sheriff's Office announced it's only waiting for Baldwin's phone records before sending its investigative file to the DA's office. They're waiting for his phone records. Do you think they'll raid his home? Do you think the FBI will have a raid of Alec Baldwin's home or no?
Doesn't seem likely.
Probably not. He's a good Democrat. He'll be okay.
Doesn't have any classified documents.
Just classified phone records.
Maybe we need to have a human source that claims they have knowledge that he has classified documents.
Yeah, that's all it takes. Are the walls closing in yet, Alec? The FBI report is no reason. The FBI report is reason to cheer. Not since O.J. Simpson have we seen someone so guilty act so aggrieved, entitled, put upon, and victimized, as if this whole tragedy has affected no one more than Baldwin himself.
This whole thing was staged.
And that's a big part of this where he made a mistake, because he went around, and what he should have done, I'm not trying to pretend like I'm some PR guru, but what he should have done is just stayed out of the public eye for as long as possible and then maybe come forward like a year or two later and done an interview where he really, once it was all settled legally, where he really apologized. Instead, he did these gratuitous interviews with like George Stephanopoulos where he made it all about himself. And then he ticked off Helena Hutchins' family, which I totally understand why they were furious to begin with. But he kind of further poured salt in the wound by going on TV. And now, naturally, he has all these lawsuits. And it also doesn't make sense that when he says, like, oh, it's not his fault, because he's also a producer on this movie. So he has even more responsibility than the average person.
Someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me. I mean, I honest to God, if I felt that I was responsible, I might have killed myself if I thought I was responsible. I don't say that lightly.
He can't get out of the actor voice.
That gruffness. Yeah. Hey, pal, I didn't come here to be made sport of.
It's really affected, you know? There's no part of that that seems natural in his voice. It's very calculated. And now, and then beyond that, beyond just the fact that he ticked off the family and then he went around, he bought a $1.75 million home in Vermont. Remember, he pulled over on the side of the street to talk to the paparazzi. He went to all these fancy restaurants.
All right, you guys have been following me, so I'll just give you a few questions here. Go ahead.
I'll just land
one. I don't know why I slipped into Liam Neeson there.
One or two punches on you guys. He hasn't beat anyone up in a while, so he's got that under control. But he also was posting social media afterwards. His wife's posting pictures of the kids saying, you know, it's really hard to take care of them during a time like this. It's so traumatic. I mean, they, at every step of the way, they handled this wrong, which does not shock me. Maybe Alec Baldwin. No, I'll end it there because I don't want to say anything that I'm not sure about.
I liked when he shushed his wife.
Yeah.
It was great.
You could feel the tension in that couple.
Let me handle this.
Please.
Please. Thank you.
Ilaria. She's just out there saying, how you say cucumber? People forget that she had her own scandal.
How you say homicide?
844-500-4242. That's a little bit of an update for you as far as Hollywood goes, but we have a lot more to get to. I also want to talk about, we didn't play the cut yesterday, Taylor, of Kathy Hochul, the joke she made about Ron DeSantis, but Ron DeSantis had a great comment back, and I want to get into that when we come back from the break, because as much as we focus on Trump derangement syndrome, we also need to focus on DeSantis derangement syndrome, because it is real, it is happening, and it is all around us. And the people who are affected by it the most right now are Democrat governors. Democrat governors have a terrible, terrible case of DDS. And we are going to try to help them through it when we come back. It looks like history is repeating itself. Today, Biden's economy is mirroring that of Jimmy Carter. The parallels are uncanny. Under Carter, both the stock market and the dollar lost more than half their value. The price of oil quadrupled. The economy tanked and inflation ran rampant. Those who owned precious metals in the 1970s saw the value of the gold rise over 1,300%. Now, the big difference between Carter and Biden was that Carter wasn't trying to legislate the taxing of retirement accounts, merging them with Social Security, or replacing the dollar bill with digital money, as Democrats are attempting to do today. What we are seeing is a once-in-every-generation opportunity. Sometimes when things get like this, money gets tight, the economy is a little shaky, people get really down and sad, but you don't realize that there's a lot of opportunity in times like this. Some analysts predict gold as high as $5,000. A network analyst predicts $15,000 in 3 years. Get Monetary Gold's complimentary protection guide if you want to protect your savings. Monetary Gold is rated a top five with the BBB, and my listeners who open a qualified account now will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. Call 888-617-7994 and ask for their free guide. Again, that's 888-617-7994, or visit them at monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace. We'll be right back with your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. As we reported earlier, Donald Trump was right about the FBI taking his passport, even though the mainstream media tried to debunk that. They try to debunk things a little too quick. If they would just wait 5 or 10 more minutes, they wouldn't have to backtrack on the debunking. But they're debunk crazy. And it turns out two of the passports were expired. One of them was not. And they're going to try to get them back to Donald Trump. But this whole raid, the more we look into it, the more we find out, the more statements we get from the DOJ and the FBI, it seems like they thought it was going to go a little bit more smoother for them. I don't know if they thought that we were all going to be excited about this or that we were all just going to take their word for things. But the more they change up the narrative, the more suspicious most of us get. Moving on, though, to something that I didn't end up playing this yesterday, Taylor, but I did think it was weird, and here's why. Kathy Hochul goes to this event, okay? And she was at a bill signing for, it was connected to Holocaust education in schools. And I want to play, now just, that's a key part of this, is where this took place. Kind of a serious event, I would say. You're at a bill signing for Holocaust education in schools. Maybe we leave politics out of it for 5 or 10 minutes. Maybe we let DeSantis stay out of the conversation for the afternoon. Not Kathy Hochul. She's got her eye on the prize. Let's take a listen.
To the 1.77 views of Call New York Home, thank you for calling New York Home. Don't go anywhere else in no better state. Florida's overrated. I shouldn't say this, but look at the governor. I mean, just start at the top down. Get in trouble. Got to stay on script.
It shouldn't be that hard to stay on script when you're talking about the Holocaust. I don't know. It doesn't sound to me. I'm not a politician, Taylor. But if you told me, oh, Grace, you're going to make a couple comments before we sign this bill about the Holocaust, you think you can just read from the paper? You know what I would say to you? I am only going to read from the paper.
Has someone else read from the paper first? Has this been proofread? Would be my first question.
Well, yeah, if you have someone who's working for you who's worked for, like, Jill Biden, you might have to look at them and say, I'm going to stick to the paper, but before I do, are tacos mentioned at all? Because if tacos are mentioned, then I'm going to be upset. But in general, you're at a somber event, you just say, yeah, no problem. I'll read exactly what you wrote. I don't need to riff. I don't need to get some jokes in. You know what it kind of reminds me of? When you go to a funeral, and this is, something about Taylor being my producer for the week. It just brings up my pet peeves. When you go to a funeral and you get a priest or, you know, some member of the spiritual clergy, and they try to make too many jokes at a funeral. Even at a wedding, I'm like one or two jokes only. I don't need a stand-up routine. I really don't. It's a serious thing. I don't need the little wisecracks. It feels like we're all watching this like amateur stand-up sometimes.
It's similar to that. I have a very similar pet peeve with funerals and priests, and it's when the deceased was not a member of the congregation there, yet the priest does all these pre-interviews with the family members and then takes all their stories and retells them terribly during his comments as if he knew the deceased. And I hate that. It's so impersonal.
I think they have to try to personalize it the best they can.
Let somebody else get up there and do that.
Yeah, well, there's an order to these things, sir.
I think the rules need to be changed
there. This isn't like open mic night at the Comedy Cellar. There's a little bit of a structure here. But my point is, it's not that hard to stay on script. It's not that hard to keep things serious every once in a while. But she has to take a jab at Ron DeSantis. And Ron DeSantis's campaign spokesperson came back with this. An event about Holocaust education is not the time to launch cheap attacks at a fellow governor. Kathy Hochul's tasteless comments were offensive to thousands of Jewish people who were fleeing her state because of New York's oppressive taxes, shuttered businesses, crime-infested cities, and needless mandates. Well, according to Kathy Hochul, it's actually only 1.77 Jews
that remain
who are in New York. So I don't know where.
New York, yeah.
I don't know where the spokesperson got the thousands from, because...
Well, the thousands have already fled.
Oh, and only 1.7 left.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with the math. We should have like a whole wall just full of each politician's different kind of math. It's all fuzzy, but they all have their different algorithms. 844-500-4242. We've got Toby Leary coming on next. And if you want to get on the line before the segment starts, now is the time. Again, that number is 844-500-4242. A lot to talk to Toby about. I will be asking him about Alec Baldwin, but just consider the source. We'll be right back.
Consider the source.